Welcome back to America Trends. John Krofcik, Larry Rifkin, along once again, as we always are. And John, I saw a piece the other day in the Wall Street Journal, and it was entitled Get Ready to Hate Sports by Holman W. Jenkins, Jr., and he writes a column regularly in the Wall Street Journal. Let me just read a little bit. New Jersey, one of the most impecunious states. Now, I believe that means that they don't handle their money terribly well.
They absolutely don't.
Right. So there they are, a state that loves to throw money away, was behind this week's Supreme Court ruling overturning a federal ban on sports gambling. Not sports fans or sport leagues. It was the work of a leading avatar of the blue state governance model in which public sector unions and politicians joined together to ratchet up unsustainable spending and debts. So that was his take on it. Now, we hadn't heard that take from many people, but regardless, whether it started with New Jersey or not, it's going to be spreading all across America, legalized gambling.
Well, it really did start with New Jersey. When New Jersey, I mean, we only had Las Vegas before. So Jersey put up their casinos and it was supposed to, you know, rebuild New Jersey. And you know, if anybody that's gone to Atlantic City, I mean, the boardwalk was beautiful, but you get anywhere beyond and you're taking your life in your hands. So I don't understand how politicians feel that gambling is going to solve all our problems.
He goes on to say, let me just read this. In the days since New Jersey got the legal go-ahead to bulk up its coffers with sports betting, the urgent job of the major sports leagues has been to stimulate pained acceptance of the inevitability of gambling. Now, they're not so pained any longer. I mean, the NBA, which I love, its predecessor in the role of commissioner, David Stern, did not want gambling. He thought it would put a taint on the games. But now Adam Silver, who was his self-appointed successor, he wants it. Yeah. So the leagues have changed their tune about this. And you know why they want it, John?
Why do they want it?
Well, it's not because they think that it's going to have an effect necessarily on their players, you know, in terms of the old payola scandals and so forth. They think those days are gone because they're paying them so well.
So no more Pete Roses, huh?
Yeah, you're not going to really have that. Everybody's making so much money. Why really turn over the apple cart? But it's really to make you want to watch the games with greater intensity for a longer period of time. So if you've got a bet on a game, even though it's a 20-point blowout, and you say, well, wait a minute. I bet that in the fourth quarter, Michael Jordan would have 50 three-pointers. I got to keep watching this game to see whether it pays off. So they really want to get you hooked and really delved into the whole sports betting thing because they figure that will make ratings go up.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really negative against gambling. I don't think it's going to solve problems, and I feel it's going to create more problems because the people who gamble, if you've been to the casinos and you see who's sitting at those one-armed bandits there, it ain't rich people.
Well, let's be honest about it. You know, when I stand in line here in our state and the cash register is going and there's an older woman in front of me and she's playing everybody's birthdays and anniversaries and everything else, I look at it this way. If she had to go to a bookmaker to do that, she's not doing that.
That's true.
And she's not throwing away a lot of money. Hey, if she wants to pay my taxes, that's fine. I don't care. But really, when you look at it, the access to it makes it much more likely that people who wouldn't get themselves in trouble or didn't even know that they had a proclivity to have an addiction to gambling, they're going to find that out pretty quickly. And then when you put it in the bedroom or you put it on my smartphone and you tell me that I can play any time of day, anywhere, any way I want to, and it's all legal, I worry about the young people getting hooked at a very early age.
And it's going to happen. It's going to happen with the, you know, the already with these offshore, games you can play, card games and stuff. I mean, the kids are already getting booked on this and hooked on this stuff.
So what we want to do is to make certain that you understand the implications of the ruling that just came down from the Supreme Court, opening up the gates for states to embark on this. And here in Connecticut, where we come from, I mean, we have a governor who said, let's have a special session and let's get the party going here in Connecticut because we're so desperate for cash. But what about all of the other social implications of this? We are bringing to you today three incredible guests to talk about different aspects of this. One is Keith White. He is the executive director of the National Council on Problem Gambling, and he's got a lot to say about this. Then we'll move on to a gentleman who used to be on every show in the world, John. Really an entertaining guy. Again, somebody who hasn't gambled in about 50 years. He ran one of these gambling operations in terms of helping the problem gambler in New Jersey of all states. He's written a book along with his wife and Steve Jacobson called All Bets Are Off, about gambling addiction and how to recover from it. His name is Arnie Wexler.
He was fun to talk to.
Oh, he's an interesting guy. He really is. And then we really ask the question of Daniel Simone, who writes about the mob in so many different ways. What about the impact on the mob and the bookmakers? And will there still be business for them at the end of the day?
I'm sure everybody's going to get in on the business.
Well, for those who actually start off legally and then realize they have no credit and they've maxed out all their cards, they then have to be thrown into the hands on the arms of the willing bookmaker. So they're not going out of business.
No. So we'll find out.
We've got three incredible guests on this one podcast. So we'll start off with Keith White and then we'll move along. Thank you for listening today. A very important day as we begin the world of legalized gambling all across the United States. Welcome to Another Trend in America. Keith White is with us. He's the executive director of the National Council on Problem Gambling. And I think the problem, Keith, may have gotten a lot bigger recently. We know we had a court ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court, that basically struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, and it freed all 50 states to regulate sports wagering. Put this in perspective for us. What does this mean?
Well, I think it's probably the single largest potential expansion of gambling in our nation's history. And as such, will lead to more gambling problems unless some really severe and extensive measures are taken to mitigate the inevitable increase in gambling problems that comes from gambling expansion.
Now, there might be some people who say, well, right now it's in the hands of bookies and mobsters and the like. If we legalize it, put it in the hands of state government, let them regulate it in some way, that's got to be better, no?
It might be, although the experience of the National Council over the last 46 years has not always been that regulation leads to good, responsible gaming. In fact, for example, Nevada, the capital, if you will, Las Vegas, of the gambling industry, only devoted public funds to prevent and treat gambling problems in 2005. And there are still eight states today who legalize and regulate gambling but don't devote a single penny of the proceeds that they make from the pockets of problem gamblers in some cases to any public funds to prevent and treat gambling addiction. So while legalization and regulation can lead to better outcomes, states have not covered themselves in glory. You know, they are often concerned with chasing the tax dollars and not as concerned with looking at the costs.
Well, we do know that. We're coming to you from Connecticut, and I remember when the two tribal casinos came online, and there were all kinds of promises about the mitigation efforts as it relates to the social effects of gambling, but I recall so many horrific stories, including a couple of tax collectors in eastern Connecticut who found themselves in a difficult way because they got outsized in terms of their gambling habit.
And gambling does create some interesting policy choices. In a lot of cases, it's the state's last legal monopoly. You know, the state doesn't manufacture tobacco and sell cigarettes itself. It taxes and regulates them, but it has kind of a third-party relationship. And the state governments now recognize that there are enormous public health costs to tobacco use. But when the state owns and operates gambling itself through its lottery or is making enormous profits through gambling privilege taxes, sometimes they're reluctant to look at the downsides or to follow through on the promises that were made to the voters. And Connecticut's a great example. There was required in the legislation to be a prevalence study done every several years that would monitor whether or not gambling addiction was increasing or not. And I think it's been almost 15 years since the last such study was done.
Yeah. Are you surprised also? I know the governor in Connecticut, Dana Malloy, very liberal or moderate to liberal, and yet he showed no compunction about calling for a legislative session to immediately take advantage of this opportunity. Are you surprised? I mean, is this a liberal conservative issue in any way?
No, not at all. So we're seeing the dollar signs in the eyes of legislators across the country. And gambling in some ways is sort of the last non-tax revenue golden goose that's around. And unfortunately, it's entirely likely that in their greed to rush into this business, you know, states may well kill that golden goose because the social costs of gambling addiction are present, whether they want to acknowledge them or not.
Tell us, what are the social costs most often associated with gambling expansion?
On a general policy level, we look at two things. We look at healthcare costs and we look at criminal justice costs. Based on some work done in the mid-90s, the National Council estimates that each problem gambler costs the state, if you will, almost $1,700 per year in primarily in criminal justice and healthcare costs. Because, of course, people with gambling problems not only need help for that problem, but they also have are much more likely to have other physical, mental, and emotional problems that we know, again, fall heavily on state agencies. And on the criminal justice side, individuals with severe gambling problems, almost two-thirds of them report committing a white-collar crime to finance their gambling. So so the cost includes not just the money stolen or embezzled, but also the cost of investigating and prosecuting and incarcerating people who have a gambling addiction. And so, of course, it costs a lot less to prevent and treat the addiction than it does to wait until for these consequences to fall on individuals, families, businesses, and, of course, state and local government.
When you look at your organization, you must think that you're fighting an uphill battle. When I look at it, I go to the grocery store the other day, and the cashier said to a woman in front of me, "Sorry, but the Connecticut lottery is down, and there's no way that I can process your ticket." And the woman was really upset. So I came behind her, and I said, "You know, my slogan is, if you can't lose if you don't play, and I never play. And if she wants to pay my taxes for me, then be my guest." And this young cashier said, "Oh, it's so popular. All these older women and men love to gamble." And obviously, these are not people who would otherwise go to a bookie in order to play the numbers. So you look at it, it seems as if this is rife throughout our entire society. I mean, you're playing whack-a-mole at this point.
Well, in a sense, you know, the United States has always been a nation of gamblers. You know, many of the pioneers were extreme risk takers. And so I think a propensity to gamble is, if you will, partly in our DNA. But and we know also that for the vast majority of people, gambling is recreational. You know, so the vast majority of people who gamble will not develop a problem. But, you know, it is, of course, the policy concern about the roughly 2% of adults who will develop an addiction. And in some cases, it is indeed an uphill battle. The numbers are less than, for example, alcohol abuse. And I think as a society, we have tried to have much more of a conversation about how to allow adults to enjoy alcohol, those who are able to do it responsibly, but make sure kids don't drive drunk. You know, make sure that we're taking care to protect women who may be in an abusive relationship with someone who's an alcoholic. And I think it's that same conversation about minimizing harm and balancing that needs to take place now around gambling in a way that it hasn't in the past.
Do you have any projections? Approximately 2% of adults experience gambling problems. Right now it's at 5 million people. Have you made any projections? Because really, when you think about it, this is the mother load. If I go to see the Knicks, and why would I go to see the Knicks, but I do, at Madison Square Garden, there are going to be people around me who are going to be betting on who wins the tip, and then who gets the most three-pointers in the next quarter. I mean, this could be outrageous. And then you've got the young people at home alone on their internet, and what's that going to be doing?
Well, I think we are engaged in a massive social experiment. Again, this would be the largest expansion of gambling in our nation's history. And I think you touched on a very important point. Almost every bill we've seen filed at the state level explicitly allows for internet and mobile gambling. And so in addition to a big policy shift, if you will, you've also got to have a huge technological shift. And that's one of the reasons why the National Council is calling for research to accompany any expansion, and frankly, research that should start now. You know, Connecticut should already know how many people with gambling problems there are and what types of games those people gamble on, so that we can start to gauge the impact of some of this of some of this expansion. And, you know, I mean, I think we may be naive, but I do think there's a responsible state government, responsible gaming operators, responsible leagues would take that into account and make sure that if gambling is as great as they say it is, they should have no fear at making sure that we're able to see the downside and we're able to minimize it. You know, but it starts with them uniting to take a look at the downside or even acknowledge the downside. And so that's where a lot of the struggle continues, is to make sure that everybody is looking at both the cost and the benefit.
It's interesting because in Connecticut, they were looking at new legislation recently that would have increased the age when somebody can buy cigarettes, I believe, to 21. I'm wondering, what kind of limits do you want your organization, of course, the National Council on Problem Gambling, in terms of the age limits when people can participate in these games, whether online or however they can do it?
It's a great question, and unfortunately, we don't have a suggested age limit. I think there's a great debate to be had whether it should be 21 or 18 or somewhere in the middle, or as the neuroscience suggests, it's really 25, which is when the brain matures and the level of risky decision making goes way down. So we don't have enough evidence to suggest what the age should be, but we would say there must be a minimum age that's set. And I think regardless of where that age is set, we know that risk taking is a central feature of adolescence. So if you don't start educating children about the risks, the health risks of gambling in middle school, you're too late. We know in North America that if you talk to problem gamblers in recovery, male problem gamblers in recovery from their gambling problem will tell you they first started gambling for money between 10 and 12 years old. So if we're not already there in middle schools doing some prevention and education work, we're far too late. So the age, whether it's 18 or 21, is important. But a public health approach demands that we start far, far, far earlier, so that by the time, whatever it is, when they hit that age, they have had extensive messaging, as we're starting to do with drug and alcohol abuse, to include gambling in that education as well.
What about the notion that we'll look at the pro sports leagues, but not the NCAA? I mean, really, is that a distinction that's going to hold up over time? There's a lot of betting that, you know, goes on already today as it relates to the Final Four and college football and the like. Is that real? Is there going to be a line demarcation about these different sports, amateur versus professional?
In the long run, I doubt it. And as you say, the Final Four in the men's basketball tournament is probably one of the most highly bet upon events in the United States. And it's no coincidence that's why we chose March as our Problem Gambling Awareness Month, just because of the massive amount of gambling and gambling-related conversation. It's interesting, the NCAA has called yesterday for a federal bill to legalize and regulate betting on sports. So this is a major shift in their position. I think they are seeing the prevailing winds and the enormous commercial pressure. And frankly, of course, I think they and their member schools are looking at the potential revenue.
Put this together with what you've seen as a result of the fantasy sports and where this takes us. This isn't fantasy. This is real life. And are you surprised that the professional leagues have taken such a turn? David Stern was against it for years with the NBA, and yet Adam Silver wants it drastically. What's going on here?
Well, it's a great question. And I think when you looked at the leagues taking investment positions and partnerships with the fantasy sports, you know, we knew this was coming because fantasy sports is gambling, is sports betting with illegal fiction over it. I mean, in some ways, it's been the biggest hoax perpetuated on legislators and gamblers. It is fantasy sports is, of course, sports betting. And so when we saw the leagues do that, we knew that coming down the pike, they were going to be highly interested in the business of sports betting. So one of the things that's interesting as we talk about where fantasy sports is going to go from now, I think one of the things that they've proven in their model is that while people are used to kind of point spread style betting, who's going to win, who's going to lose, there's far more betting opportunities and there's far more casual and indeed engaged fan interest in just the kinds of things you talked about. Who's going to bet, who's going to make the most three-point shots, who wins the tip-off. You know, that's the market fantasy sports opened up. We see that in-play betting market, as it's called in the UK. It's incredibly lucrative, and that's what you're looking at now. I think the leagues are looking at monetizing every single element of every single play in every single game.
It's unbelievable. And there's nothing that succeeds in America like excess. I've said that time and time again. Now, you were quoted, and I'm going to quote you. Right now, the safety net is already tattered, and this massive expansion may rip it apart. Now, I am reading from the American Gaming Association. They're estimating that 28 million more Americans would wager on sports. Looking at that as a percentage of those who are going to get themselves into trouble, that's adding how many people?
So call it, 5% of active gamblers, give or take, have a problem or will develop a problem. So you're looking at another 1.4 million people with gambling problems, if you take my estimates and their figures.
So that's families ruined, homes lost, jobs that have to be left and vacated because you just have a problem. I mean, just a myriad of things.
Yeah, and the social cost, it's really important to note, this is never something that only affects the individual. It affects their family, it affects their workplace, and it affects their community, and ultimately, of course, when you multiply it across, it affects the state. So, just as addiction doesn't strike alone, so too are solutions community-based. You know, again, we've achieved a remarkable consensus over the last 10 years about the public health implications of tobacco, and there have been, some really impressive moves at the state and the federal level. Companies working together with public health advocates, we could see that same sort of partnerships possible. It's just going to take a lot of will, and unfortunately, I think the warning sign again for the leagues and for the gaming operators in the states is it took a $700 billion tobacco settlement. It took litigation and legislation to force everybody to the table. We hope that something like that doesn't happen, but one way or another, we have to change the way we think about gambling. Right now most everyone is focused only on the benefits, and they're not focused on the cost, and that has to be rebalanced if this enterprise is going to go forward and if it's going to be sustainable.
And I know you feel that any governmental body or sports league that receives a direct percentage or portion of sports betting revenue must also dedicate funds to prevent and treat gambling problems. So is that going to be voluntary or is that going to be compulsory?
Well, I think it's the most common sense proposition you can make, especially when it's a new form of gambling you're legalizing. You weren't making these revenues before. You're not going to miss the equivalent of 1%, and it's going to not only help a lot of people, but it's going to help you sustain your own business. This should be the most basic proposition around. We encourage it to be done voluntarily, but when and where it's not, regulation and legislation is absolutely appropriate because it is the only way to conduct gambling responsibly is to make sure that you're trying to minimize problems. And again, we would say 1%, that's a baseline. If Connecticut chooses to engage in a prevalence study and they find out what the need is to make sure there's a world-class prevention and education system for gambling addiction, if it's 1.5%, I think that's absolutely a minor cost. You know, you're still keeping 98%. Yeah.
Well, New Jersey, I know, is going to be jumping on this. I mean, is there legislation in New Jersey to be concomitant involved with many reduction and mitigation programs for the social effects?
Yeah, I'm pleased to say that one of the leading bills in New Jersey, and there are several, one of the leading bills does have provisions to increase the support for addiction research and prevention. It's not exactly where we'd like it to be, but it's a start. And I think it's a very good faith effort on the part of the sponsors and the regulators to reach out to our state chapter there and to engage in these discussions. You know, we might not get everything we'd like, but at least the state is recognizing that they have an obligation and that they're taking responsibility for some of the harm that will be caused by the expansion of legalized gambling.
If we are bringing gambling to everybody's desktop, I mean, what are the implications of this that perhaps we haven't thought about, but the National Council on Problem Gambling has?
Well, I think one of the implications that's interesting that may be positive is a normalization of gambling. And that may sound weird to say, but let me explain a little bit more. One of the reasons that gambling addiction has been such a difficult problem to address is that it breeds in shame and silence and stigma. And so we haven't really had a big conversation about it. It's been seen as an individual problem, you know, as someone who's insufficiently religious or someone who's greedy, someone who's not good with their money. You know, it's not been really seen as a societal problem. And so now that you know, the entire country is now potentially going to be able to bet on sports in a way that they've never been able to do before, you know, there is a teachable moment, perhaps. And so, I think we've had that same transition with alcohol. You know, it used to be something in the, you know, 50s and 60s that wasn't talked about, and now it certainly is a conversation that can be done openly and honestly, and we're really talking about the cost and the benefits. And I think that's where I hope we're going with gambling. Now, on the flip side, you know, this is now my generation was the first generation to be raised with widespread access to high-stakes, high-speed gambling. And I think my son's generation, this next generation, is going to be raised with ubiquitous access to not just high-speed, high-stakes gambling, but a wide range of things from sports to the video games that my son plays that have now been gamblified or could be gamblified. And again, that's a massive social experiment that we have not really grasped our, you know, wrapped our heads around quite yet. You know, what happens when you can gamble on anything, anywhere, at any time, and it may not even be, you may not even realize it's gambling. You know, it's a video game or it's a sporting event.
And when we think about it, I mean, if states are really becoming reliant upon this money, they are going to make this so sexy and appealing and fun and without any downside. Whereas now, just to get back to your analogy, not about alcohol, but perhaps cigarettes, there is a stigma attached to the cigarette smoker. Go outside. We don't want you near us. We think it's a stinking, awful habit. But now we're going to be looking upon it as a really fun thing to do.
Well, and it's interesting, the states have placed themselves in the position where they're now, as you say, dependent on these revenues, and where you would never see a state have a billboard saying, buy another case of beer, it's great for our roads, or smoke another pack of cigarettes, it's good for teacher pay. That's literally explicitly the message that state lotteries are doing. And, you know, so there is, it can be a very difficult question to balance. And you know, I'm not sure that we've reached that consensus yet, but I think we'll be getting there. And again, what sort of message does that send on a societal level? You know, gambling is good, and I think it needs to be tempered with gambling is good, but it also has, you know, it's also got some risk. There's some downside. You know, it's not good for everybody. And we don't know yet exactly how to send those messages or what to say. We don't know if this is going to end up being a little bit more like an issue like alcohol or an issue like tobacco, to use those two examples as two different ways societies respond to a product that is addictive for a percentage of users. You know, and gambling, you know, may fall somewhere in the middle. We don't know yet. Is partly because, again, there's not enough research to really enable us to puzzle out some of these deeper questions.
Well, I think we're going to see you as the anti-Gordon Gekko. Greed is good. No, it's not. Nor is gambling necessarily. I mean, for your organization, seriously, are you going to be beefing up? Are other organizations like yours, Gamblers Anonymous, are we going to see a proliferation of these types of organizations?
Well, I think if gambling is going to be sustainable, if states are going to continue to get involved, if the leagues are going to get involved, you're going to need us or someone like us. You know, you're going to have the first ever national funding. As incredible as it seems, gambling is one of the only diseases or disorders that receives no federal funding. So the state of Connecticut receives federal support for tobacco and AIDS and diabetes. Not a single cent of the revenue, the tax revenue from legalized gambling that goes to the federal government, comes back to Connecticut to help deal with this disorder. You know, that's going to need to change because, as you know, if you win a jackpot of more than $1,200 in Connecticut, be it a tribal casino or be it the lottery, the federal government gets a chunk of that money. It was almost $7 billion last year. And so Connecticut can play an important role through its elected representatives of helping return some of that money both to the federal health agencies to do the good work that NIH and CDC does, and as grants at the state level to help the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling do the kinds of educational and treatment and research programs that you receive for other behavioral health and diseases and disorders.
Well, ready or not, as Jason Gay said in the Wall Street Journal, here comes the sports gambling apocalypse. And the man who's going to head off some of the crisis that may ensue, Keith White, I want to thank you for being with us. He's the executive director of the National Council on Problem Gambling. And if people want to get more information about this and want to help to deflect some of the concerns that we've been discussing, how can they reach you or your organization?
Oh, absolutely. Our website is ncpgambling.org, and we run a 24-hour nationwide, toll-free, and most importantly, confidential helpline. It's 1-800-522-4700. You can call, text, or chat to that number 24/7 to reach a counselor and information referral resources in your area. We're eager to build a citizens coalition of all the stakeholders, including government, gaming industry, the tribes, and, you know, ordinary advocates that want to make sure that we're looking at ways to balance costs and benefits of this expansion. So we welcome the opportunity to engage with you, Larry, and to work with your listeners as well.
Thank you very much, Keith White, for being part of America Trends. And this is certainly something that will have an impact over the horizon for many, many years to come. Thanks for coming by today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
We continue on America Trends as we look at legalized gambling in America with a man who knows so well the implications of all of this, Arnie Wexler. The book, All Bets Are Off. You've got to hear this, man. On the line with us is Arnie Wexler. I think people know you as probably one of the greatest proponents of dealing with the gambling addiction. And you've got a book, Gambling Addiction, How to Recover from It, All Bets Are Off. And that was written by you and Sheila Wexler and Steve Jacobson. So you heard this U.S. Supreme Court ruling. What do you think?
Well, I knew it was coming down the pike weeks ago, to be honest with you. But here's the real kicker. When I ran the New Jersey Council on Compulsive Gambling, we hired Gallup to do a survey, and we asked two questions. We asked a bunch of questions, but two questions pertain to this. We asked, do you ever play illegal lottery numbers, lottery numbers? And people, 31% said yes. Do you play the say lottery? 81% said yes. You're going to have the same situation here with the sports betting. You got a bunch of people that would never do anything illegal or do anything wrong. And now that it's legal, they're going to go gamble on sports. And some of those people have the genes already in their system to be a compulsive gambler. And we're going to have a flood of gambling addiction people who are gambling on sports legally in this country. Gamblers and the people coming in for help will be flooding the places to get help.
And Arnie, are you worried more about young people?
Absolutely, because sports betting is a young thing. And the proof of the pudding is we had four young kids come for help about a month ago. They were 17 to 21, and they were losing all kinds of money on sports gambling.
You say that the treatment centers are going to be opening up doors everywhere. It's going to go crazy. I mean, you think we really are looking at something we haven't imagined before?
We're going to have an epidemic. When they opened up, when they started to do internet gambling on the TV and on the computer, when they started the poker stuff, 2 years later down the road, we had an influx of people coming for help. But this one is going to be a real volcano.
And when you look at it, what is it that it's going to spawn? I mean, give us the industries that are going to be coming about or the ways that this is going to be so infectious so appealing, at least in the way they promote it.
Well, the other thing that's going to happen is you got gamblers that are going to gamble legally and then get tapped out money-wise. Mm. And they're going to create more work for the bookmakers. It's not going to get rid of the illegal people because the illegal people give you credit. And when the gambler's tapped out and can't bet legally, he's going to go or she's going to go to gamble illegally.
So what about all the games? In other words, you go to a basketball game now, and maybe, I don't know, 1% or 2% of the people are gambling. There you are in Madison Square Garden, and the Knicks are getting pummeled, unfortunately. And all of a sudden, people are gambling on just about anything, including when the coach is going to sneeze.
Well, it's interesting you talk about that. I remember going to Madison Square Garden before I stopped gambling, and if the team was losing, they'd be cursing and screaming at the home team because they didn't cover the spread. Here's the interesting part. You had the NFL, you had the NBA, you had Major League Baseball in 1991 and 92 when Bill Bradley put the bill in to make sports betting legal and the states had an 18-month window and nobody really put it in. They all came out against sports betting and now they're all for sports betting. Just give us a piece of the action.
Exactly. And they think that this is going to create an environment where people can't leave. It doesn't matter what the score is. It's determined by what kind of bet they've got on this game.
If you didn't give out the injury list at the NFL and the people weren't gambling on the NFL, you would have hockey.
That's a good way of putting it. Now, you also tell us that your experience shows all of this, because when you were in New Jersey, you're running the compulsive gambling group there, and there, before the casinos opened in Jersey, there were 11 or 12 Gamblers Anonymous meetings in the state. 4 years later, how many?
There were 14 before casinos, and there were 47 2 years later.
So put that on a national scale here.
Well, you know, you look at that. Iowa had no Gamblers Anonymous meetings until the casinos came to town. Mississippi had none. Louisiana had none. So this tells you what's going to happen. It's going to really be an explosion. It's going to be an epidemic. And 2 years from now, and the states are going to love it because they're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, but they're going to put so much money, as you can imagine, the states and the pro leagues and all, they're going to put them into mitigation programs for those who do get addicted. That hasn't been the history, has it?
No, it's never been the history. You know, the casinos in New Jersey at one time were making $400 million a year, and and I was running the Council on Compulsive Gambling, and our budget was $400,000.
And right now we're reading that there are about 5 million gambling addicts in the country.
I'm sorry, I said 400 million. It was billion at the time.
Billion. Wow. But there are about 5 million gambling addicts. What is this going to mean, ultimately, to that number?
I think there's a lot more than 5 million gamblers in trouble in this country. But here's the why nothing happens with that. There's no track marks, there's no dilated pupils, there's no smell, you can't see them, they're not falling down and passing out. The compulsive gamblers are a hidden group of people, and that's the real problem.
And when you look at it, when we take the stigma out of this, I mean, will older people who love lotteries, will they partake in this? And how will the states market this?
Well, they're going to market it very aggressively because they're going to put money in the coffers in the states. And the fact is that we had an influx of senior citizens coming for help, especially female senior citizens, once the casinos open up slot machines. in any place in the country that was predominant. But whoever likes a ball game, whoever watches a sport and thinks they can make a $5 bet or a $10 bet or a $100 bet, it's going to be open country now.
What about this now being clickbait? There you are at your desktop, and you're bored, and you've watched all the pornography you can. So you say, let me go on and make a bet. Maybe they'll even make a bet on what happens with the porno movies.
Well, here's the interesting piece, too. You know, when I gambled, and I'm clean now over 50 years, when I gambled, you had to take a car or a bus or a train to a racetrack. When the casinos came to town, you had to do the same thing. When the Internet opened up with the gambling and the sports stuff and the Internet and the poker, you could sit in your birthday suit in the middle of the night and gamble away anything you wanted to. And this is an impulse disorder. If a gambler gets an urge at 3 o'clock in the morning, they open up their computer, forget about it. They can lose everything they have.
And what kind of easy marks are they, literally, the young people in particular, given how interested they are already in fantasy sports betting?
Well, that's another thing we didn't even talk about. The fantasy sports has exploded, and I get calls all the time from parents with the kids on the fantasy sports. And there's another hypocrisy going on. New York State said they weren't going to allow fantasy sports in New York State, and they went to the court, and they blocked it. And then 6 months later, they made a deal with the fantasy sports people. New York State gets 14.5%, and all of a sudden, fantasy sports is running rampant and legal in the state of New York. So, you know, it's really a shame, but the legislators and the government people think this is an easy money thing, but it's destroying a lot of lives and hurting a lot of people.
Arnie, if you were a betting man, and I know you haven't been for 50 years, I mean, how soon will this all take effect? How many states do you think will come on? And maybe somebody's going to bet whether it's going to be 50 or 40 or whatever, and they'll do the over-under on that. But what do you think in terms of the numbers and how quickly this will all ramp up?
Well, you know, if you look at the history of New Jersey, Atlantic City opened up in 1978, I believe. And no other state had casino gambling. And now there's probably 20 or 30 states have casino gambling. So it runs rapid when this thing happens. New Jersey is probably going to be the first one to put in place because they've been working on it for years.
Well, Monmouth Park, they're ready to go, aren't they?
Well, I think some stories I hear that it has to still clear Congress somehow. I don't know why.
I don't know. I think Congress can intervene, but I think the pressure and the you know, politics behind this now is all systems go, I think.
Well, the senators and the legislators from Las Vegas will try to block it. That's for sure, because then they can keep their monopoly.
Yeah, but Harry Reid is gone, and I don't think they have that kind of clout that Nevada against the world.
Well, you know, usually when the Internet came, when the poker came, when the casinos came, it took about 2 years till you get the influx of people that are getting destroyed by this addiction.
Do you think the illegal part of gambling crumbles or actually benefits?
I think they benefit in the long run because people that have been gambling with the illegal people feel comfortable and they know that it's okay. And the other thing is, you're going to get taxed on money that you win on the computer or in the casino if it's over $600. So people are going to think, you know, let me stick with my bookmaker. The other thing, they're going to create more people going to bookmakers because when they get tapped out and they want to gamble and get credit from a bookmaker, they're not going to get credit from the state.
What about some of the social programs that need to accompany this expansion? Do you think that can be voluntary or should it be compulsory?
It should be compulsory for the states to put money into it, but there's no way you can make help for compulsive gamblers compulsory. I just got off with a treatment center. I got a young man that I put in a treatment center last week. So now they find out that he owes $200,000 in gambling debt. He told me he only gambles in casinos. Now they found out he's been betting sports for the last 18 months.
Well, Arnie Wechsler, in closing, anything else you want to tell us or foreshadow about this ruling and its impact?
Well, I really think it's going to be a real mess a couple of years from now. A lot of families are going to be destroyed. If people want to get a hold of my book, it's All Bets Are Off, And if they want to reach me, you can reach me at 888-LASTBET. That's my hotline number. And I hope people, you know, understand that this can really hurt them if they're getting involved with addiction to gambling, if they have the genes in their body and you don't know until it happens.
All bets are off. Arnie Wechsler, Sheila Wechsler, and Steve Jacobson. And Arnie, thank you so much for being with us today on America Trends.
Thank you. You're terrific. Anytime.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah. That's right, where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct message us
news
at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends. And now another aspect of legalizing gambling in the United States. What's the impact on organized crime? For that, we turn to Daniel Simone, who's written extensively about the mob in America, and we ask him, is this the end of illegal gambling in America and loan sharking? I think you know the answer.
On the line with us is a man we always turn to when we have issues related to the mob. And of course, there is this issue of whether betting and loan sharking as a core business of the mob will be interrupted, if you will, by legalized gambling now made legal by the U.S. Supreme Court, undergoing this transformation through state-by-state activity. Daniel, is this going to put the mob totally out of business?
I don't think so. I don't think that this will have any effect at all on the mafia-backed bookmakers for the simple reason that the state gambler is one type of customer, and the gambler who bets with the bookmakers is an entirely different animal. The state gambler will bet $2 and $3 or $4 and $5, whereas the gambler who bets with the book with the mafia-backed bookmaker bets in the thousands of dollars. So they're two different customers. And for that reason, I really don't see any effect at all that the legalized gambling would have on the mafia gambling. And secondly, the mafia offers an accommodation that the state does not, credit. Credit that the gambler cannot resist. So if you bet $1,000 with a bookmaker, you don't have to lay out the money. If you win, well, then you're paid your winnings. If you lose, you have credit, and you have a certain credit limit. And if the credit if you exceed the credit limit and you're unable to repay, well, then the bookmaker will be delighted to refer you to an associate loan shark. So you can borrow money from the loan shark and satisfy the bookmaker. So the credit is the option or the accommodation that is irresistible to the degenerate gambler.
It all sounds so accommodating until you go from the bookmaker to the loan shark, and then you don't pay the loan shark. Well, we kind of know how that story ends, and we don't have to get into it. It's a little gruesome. Any possibility that some of these guys are going to become, well, consultants to state government or to legalize gambling operations?
Not unless they're willing to become informants. So that I don't see that as a possibility. But as I said, as far as having an impingement on the mafia gambling operation, I don't see it, because they are distinctively two different types of customers.
And when lotteries started to form and a lot of legalized gambling at casinos and the like, I mean, we remember when the mob was totally tied up in those operations, and they probably didn't mind losing grandma to the lottery. But what is their role currently in the casino operations that seem to be proliferating around the country?
The casinos, the legalized casino operations are, in fact, quite prolific at this point in stage, and yes. But as far as the mafia having any control over a casino, for that matter, to be more specific, the days of glory when the mafia controlled Las Vegas, that is something that is no longer viable.
So even some of those that became storied because of the mob involvement, you think they're totally out of those operations?
They're totally out of those operations. The not to mention the fact that the legalized casinos, in order to be granted a gambling license, a gaming license from that specific state that the casino is in, is a very, very rigorous approach. It's a very rigorous procedure, and if the state examiners detect any insinuations, any possibilities of an underworld figure involved in the license application, the license will never be granted.
Is it possible that this will have the reverse effect, because a lot of people will start getting a taste for gambling in these legal ways, and then that taste needs to be satisfied, but they have bigger dreams, ambitions, hopes, and they end up saying, well, I really don't think I can just play this small game. I want to go into the big game, and the bookies are still there waiting for the business.
There's no question about it. That is a possibility, Larry. It's an enticement. You know, that's always ever present. Yes, it's a strong possibility.
Combined with drug legalization, which is really beginning to take hold in various states, what's a greater blow, if there is a blow, to organized crime? And I don't know that you think there is, but is it drug legalization or gambling legalization?
I think it would be drug legalization. As you and I have been discussing a minute or two ago, I don't believe that the gambling legalization will have any sort of significant impact on the mafia, but the drug legalization certainly will.
And so are they fighting that, or are they going to the harder drugs because marijuana is getting legalized or decriminalized in many states?
Well, the mafia has always been predominantly involved in the harder drugs, the heroin, the cocaine, yes, the difficult-to-obtain amphetamines. But as far as fighting for it, you know, the mafia can't put together a coalition or a lobby, you know, a lobby quorum, for example. So there isn't much they can do but hope that somehow they can readjust their business practices to overcome the competition.
You know that many people are talking about people being able to gamble on anything, and I'm not certain exactly how states will develop that or how they'll contract out some of the supply for that. But there's also this talk about clicking on your computer and online gambling. And the question is, will the mob find it very useful to have this online gambling, and perhaps they go a bit offshore and they have operations on ships beyond the waters into the international waters? Is that a possibility?
No, operation on ships in international waters isn't viable for the simple reason that it isn't practical. For many different aspects. But the infiltration of the mafia taking advantage of the Internet gambling, yes, that is not only a possibility, but it's a definite probability.
So how do they do that? I mean, what's the mechanism that allows them to say, this is the part of the new game that we really can participate in, and are they becoming technologically astute?
Yes, they are, because that is the only way that they can survive and compete in modern days. And of course, if you have an operation on the internet, regardless whether it's gambling or any other type of business, or whether you're selling baseball cards on the internet, you could be based anywhere. It's very difficult for the government to control. It would be very difficult for the licensor to even have an idea of where the operation is based or who's behind the operation. So yes, the online gambling is definitely and most likely the next target that the mafia will hone in on.
And you think they'll be able to evade detection because of the anonymity that the internet can provide?
No doubt about it. Matters stand now, but perhaps the government may implement other features or security measures to ensure that the government will have some sort of control over the internet gambling. That's also a likely possibility.
Let me give you a philosophical question. As somebody who has studied the mafia and the mob over the years, what happens to a society that takes what once was the mob's itself and begins to legalize it across many different realms? I mean, maybe prostitution is next. I don't know. But what does it say about our society?
Well, it says that the government isn't really keeping up with technology. The government is not updating itself as rapidly as the criminals are. That's the first take that I get from this. And not to mention the fact that I think our modern society is much more debased than societies of previous generations. As I see it, this is my opinion, of course.
So you think the line between what we used to think was appropriate and said that you are a person of rectitude has now been blurred and just about anything goes? Is that what you're saying?
It's been compromised significantly, yes. It has to a great extent, and not to mention the fact that society itself is more freewheeling and free-minded. So I don't think anyone my age would love to have 25 years back of their lives. so would I, of course. But when I reflect more seriously on it, I say to myself, you know what, I think I would rather stay in the time and age that I am now rather than to go back in time 25 years or so, because I prefer to the way things were decades ago as opposed to where society has gone presently.
Daniel, speculate on this. We have seen certain scandals in pro sports, and pro sports said they were averse to this notion of legalized gambling. I remember David Stern, I'm a big fan of the NBA, he didn't want it at all, and yet Adam Silver, his successor, really wants it. They want to keep everybody excited and into the game until the last second. The question is there a likelihood that we're going to see more point shaving or skimming or referees being compromised? Do you see any of that possibility in all of this?
No, Larry. I'll tell you the reason why. When Henry Hill was able to devise the Boston College, the infamous Boston College point shaving scheme, those players back then were hungry. They were desperate because they were hardly, being paid any sort of money. Typically, they would get paid a ham sandwich and a six-pack of beer. And of course, it was easy to bribe them. It was easy to entice them. So Henry Hill paid them a couple of $1,000, and he owned them. He had them in their pocket. Today, even college players are earning significantly more money, and it would be far more difficult to entice them and bribe them.
Well, you just told us something, because Daniel, I don't think they're supposed to be paid, but I think there are many ways around that.
There are. They're getting, in other words, I didn't mean a payment in the form of cash, but their benefits, the end result is more, they have more at risk.
Absolutely. And their future holds such promise in terms of money.
Well,
Daniel Simone,
absolutely.
Always fascinating to talk to you. And tell us what you're working on now. I know you have a new book out in paperback. And tell us about that.
Yes, my recent book titled De Pierre Hotel Affair was just recently released in paperback form, and it's available in all bookstores or, for that matter, on Amazon. And I'm my book about Charles Manson will be published on or about November of this year, and then I have other sensational projects that I'm not at liberty to announce at this point. But yes, I'm keeping very busy.
All right. Always terrific to talk to you, Daniel Simone. Thanks for coming by as we talk about the legalization of sports betting and the impact on the mob. Thanks again.
As always, Larry, it's my pleasure.